The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I'm Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. Before we get too deep into this episode, just a quick trigger warning that we are going to be talking about some instances of sexual assault, abuse, and things that are related to that. So if that is a trigger for you, also some violence in these songs, if that is a trigger for you, then here's your warning, just so you know. Samantha, were you ever into emo or pop punk music?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I definitely was that girl who felt all those emo emotions. Of course, like, you couldn't tell by what I would wear. I wasn't that into it. But yeah, I definitely had some Dashboard Confessional and all of the such in my repertoire. What about you?
Oh, yes. I was so into it. I did wear the clothes. I did the eye makeup. I had the studded belt. I painted my nails like black and red. For a while, all I wore was pretty much black with like accents of red in it. And this was when I was in high school. This was when I was super into it. And I remember introducing my very, very confused high school teacher to the term emo. And she was like, I guess I'll add that to my dictionary. and I got some autographs. I interviewed Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance. But that was, I was dressed as Winter Soldier. That was much later. I joined an emo band of my own. And I still feel very nostalgic for a lot of these songs. I sing them at karaoke. I listen to them when I'm sad and need to belt something out. I still have the band shirts. But yes, as I've gotten older and more allegations have come out largely about male members of these bands of abuse and grooming and sexual assault, it has kind of made it harder to listen to some of this music, especially if the lyrics are kind of stalkery or abusive. And it's especially complicated because I did form a lot of close bonds with women over this music and over these concerts. And I mean, we still talk about like all of the music festivals we went to and how we like made it to all these different Green Day concerts, which they're slightly different, I will say, than what we're talking about here. But they had an emo phase. And yeah, now knowing that there is a lot of abuse within this world and that has made some of it uncomfortable. And I did listen to a lot of songs from my youth for this, and it brought back the memories.
As it should. My partner and I sat one day and listened to a lot of the 90s and early 2000s songs that we used to love, including like Coheed and Cambria and all of that. And for some reason, a lot of that bled into like Christian alternative.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so I have, because I grew up as a high schooler who was all about Jesus, that I had all of that music because I was super cool. Uh-huh. So I was
I was agreeing with you.
I'm going to leave it at that. But like that was the same thing. And a lot of the things that we're talking about the misogyny was in these little Christian punk bands that made me go, what? You would think that wouldn't be the case. Let's be honest. Like, there's a lot of hypocrisy and we know this. And if you've been a part of that culture, you understood that.
Mm-hmm.
But it still was so disappointing when you read half of the things that you're like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's strange when you... Because this was a very formative time for me. And like, I identified with the music so closely. And then you listen to it as an adult and you're like, wow, this is really violent and hateful towards women.
Right.
Wow. And I guess I didn't... There was something at the time, heavy quotes, romantic about feeling that level of emotion.
Yeah.
But it's messed up.
It really is.
Yeah.
And when you really just want to be... a big part of it. You know, one of the big things, and we're going to get into it more, but I just remembered a moment where one of the big bands, which was called Reliant K, that's come over into the popular contemporary stuff and mainstream stuff. And then the woman who was a DJ in Atlanta, who was engaged to the lead singer, as she was so excited, was doing a whole segment about wedding planning and talking about how it was so romantic. It turned out he cheated on her with a fan, and it just got splashed everywhere. And I was like, oh, dude, huge mistake in dating a radio, celebrity who just called your out. And all of your fans are probably beyond disappointed because not only did you take advantage of this fan, I think, but you broke this woman's heart who talked about how holy your relationship was.
Right.
But that's a whole different story. But it is stuff like that that reminds me of like, yeah, these good guys were emotional, all right, and took advantage of everybody else's emotional stuff.
Yes,
but
yes.
Let's go backwards a little bit. Talk about definition, because we love a definition. What is emo/pop punk? From a 2014 paper by Sam Dubois called Cheer Up, Emo Kid, Rethinking the Crisis of Masculinity in Emo. He writes, emo, an abbreviation for emotional, is a term both used to describe music, which places public emphasis on introspective displays of emotion, and a pejorative phrase applied to fans for a diverse range of music. It's overwhelmingly male-dominated in terms of production, and it has been suggested that the development of emo can be explained with a reference to a, quote, crisis of masculinity. The term first originated in the 1980s to describe hardcore emotional punk, though we're largely talking about the third wave of emo in the early 2000s. Yeah, so the bands we're talking about specifically right now, that's what we're talking about. And the article goes to examine fears around identity queering and the effeminization of mostly young men. And remember the whole guyliner panic? And we're still talking about it because I still hear people talking about it to this day.
Yes. And actually, people have speculated about the masculine stances and performances. So there's like the phallic guitar and the wide leg stance of so-called cock rock alongside the tight jeans, the unisex hoodies, and guyliner. So gender bending, somewhat. And what that means, the debate is ongoing. I mean, this stuff is being talked about right now.
Yeah. I just remember distinctly having an argument with my brother. If I liked somebody, I think Jared Leto, and this was before he became a band. Like, he was always a part of a band, but he wasn't big in music yet. This was his My So-Called Life era.
Oh,
and he was kind of that emo kid. He is that emo disenfranchised outsider that I was like, yes. But he definitely had the eyeliner, has some fingernail polish. And my brother was like, what's wrong with you? He dresses like a girl. It's like, he's in touch with his feminine side. You don't know him.
That's so funny because I also got in a fight with somebody about Jared Leto that was kind of similar. And I ended up getting his autograph from 30 Seconds to Mars days. But let me tell you, I've never frozen so hard with a celebrity before where I was like, oh my God, what am I doing here? I want this moment to end right now. This is so weird.
I've not gone there, but I do find those moments interesting. By the way, pop punk is defined by the culture wiki like this. Pop punk, also known as punk pop, is a music genre that fuses elements of punk rock and pop music. It typically combines fast tempos, loud and distorted electric guitars, and power chord changes with pop-influenced melodies, vocal styles, and lyrical themes, which I believe I sent you a sample of a song we talked about previously.
You did. because one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this was because we kind of touched on it in our episode on Jennifer's Body, and there's that kind of whole theme of the emo band and them sacrificing her for emo fame. And we learned that Samantha had some songs with lyrics that she lended to them or that were about her. And she sent one to me and I listened to it. And it brought me great joy.
It absolutely is punk rock pop punk. I don't think he would like that's how we're defining it.
Right.
Because he wants to be kind of outside of that. It is now what we would probably regard as indie.
Mm-hmm.
Indie rock. But I learned many a genres within this, like shoegazers and all of that stuff. But I was like, what is happening? Why are there so many titles and or related types of things?
Right.
What is happening? So, but yes, you're welcome, Annie. No one else will be able to hear this, but you're welcome.
Yes. If that guy's randomly listening, I was the person who listened to it randomly. You got a notification. And I do want to say, also kind of going along with that, emo, while describing a type of music, is also used frequently to describe kind of the fans. So it can get murky when you're talking about it like that. And a lot of people described it in a way that I felt targeted by, but was absolutely true, which is kind of like mall Hot Topic set, the mall Hot Topic set. And that is what I was. I had a Hot Topic punch card.
Oh,
and
did
more
you?
Than once. Oh, I
See,
got all the
I grew
way.
Up in the generation that was the devil. And I could not go in there.
Really? I mean, my parents wouldn't go in. They're like, you go. We'll wait
my
out
parents
here.
Would not let me go.
Wow.
And then by the time I was old enough to do so, I was like, nah, I'm good.
I'll go in occasionally now. And it's just such a throwback. It is such a, like, I remember being in here and wanting, because I couldn't afford a lot of stuff in there. It's expensive. But the Green Day jacket that I wear to this day is from Hot Topic. The zip-up hoodie. $40 I saved up for that one. And I still wear it. I love it.
She still wears it, y'all. And it's intact. Like, it is still in good condition.
I like it because it has pockets. Yes. And you can zip it and unzip it. It's nice. But that reminds me of a funny story where I think in high school, I dressed as essentially a really emo kid. And we didn't get many trick-or-treaters in my neighborhood, but doorbell rang and I answered it. And it was a young mother and her like maybe 2-year-old daughter who was dressed as Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. And they both looked terrified of me. Like, I could see immediately the mother was like, this is a mistake. We're going to leave. And they're
Turn
like backing
around,
up and
kids.
I'm like, candy? And they're like, no. So there was kind of that vibe too, especially in conservative areas of it being like, I don't know, risque or dangerous or devil related. All these kids wearing all black. Their studded belts.
Those studded belts.
And the funny thing was you had to take off the studded belt to get into the concert. And then at the end, there'd be just like this huge thing of studded belts. So you'd like put your initials on your belt so you could find it. But we all wore it for the waiting in line to get in. Because it was a piece of our identity, which is part of the pain of why we, as a lot of us, as young fans, were taken advantage of. And I did want to mention before we go on here, this was a listener suggestion. So Beck wrote in, a topic I think would be interesting to cover would be about the emo scene, music scene from the years 2003 to 2012-ish. This article briefly covers what it was like growing up as a girl teen and being exposed to the culture that was essentially ruled by misogynistic men. A simple lyrics breakdown of popular emo scene songs from this era is enough to say that women were treated like objects to appease men, especially if they didn't reciprocate their feelings for them. Topics of abuse, murder, and the copious amount of gaslighting was a common theme in most of the songs from this era. And yeah, we're about to get into some lyrics here in a second. But yeah, a lot of these songs focus on boys or men's bodies, particularly white, straight, cis men, on their fears of rejection or on the actual rejection, on their hurt or anger at women, on sexualizing women's bodies or blaming their unhappiness and or pain on women. People who have traced the history of punk, pop punk, and emo over the years often point out that emo and pop punk weren't always this way. The songs used to give women's names, and they would give these women autonomy and depth. People who weren't super idealized and on a pedestal, which is also part of what we're talking about here in these third wave emo songs. But then something shifted in the 2000s, and emo albums largely became about men's heartbreak and the nameless women at the cause of it as the enemy. Women existed in these songs as simply an object that messed with men's hearts and lives as either the perfect woman or muse, and that's sort of like the best end of the spectrum, or the vessel for their sperm or like hatred. A part of the men's story, that's what they served these women in these songs, a possession to be won or lost, blaming women and only women for their emotional state, which feels very telling of the songwriter's views on women. There's a lot of gaslighting and slut-shaming in them. Emo and pop punk became another boys' club because, as you noticed, we're talking about men writing these songs, and that's because that was largely the case. And this boys' club was one that looked down on the girls and women fans who made up their fan base. At 2014's Warped Tour, 6% of bands featured a single woman in their numbers over the 120-band lineup, and that's doing anything, while the crowd was a majority female at 53%.
Hmm. That yes. says a lot in general.
It does. I did go to Warped Tour one time, and it was so hot. That's what I remember, was that it was hot, and I got a really cool shirt, but that's it.
I will say, I don't go to concerts much, mm-hmm. and I still don't. It's too crowded for me. Like, I knew then that I couldn't mm-hmm. handle it, and I still know today. And also, shelling out a lot of money for a concert never made sense to me. I'm too practical and too cynical, and like, I don't want to be in a crowd where I can't see somebody and barely hear the music and I'm getting touched all the time. I don't want to. But the few times that I did go was because it was free mm-hmm. or it was convenient. And it included like Switchfoot, Reliant K.
Yep, yep.
I went to see them, I think, a couple of times. I also went to see Weezer.
Oh.
Yeah, but because they were performing in Atlanta for free and we were like just there. I was like, oh. What's happening?
Was it the Downtown Rocks? Because I was at that one too.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was during the, Centennial.
Yeah.
When they were having the free shows for Centennial Park, essentially. And mm-hmm. I was at a restaurant and hanging out. Like, it was awesome because we were at a restaurant doing something. I think we thought something was happening. We didn't know exactly where. Mm-hmm. And then we showed up and we ended up going to a restaurant eating. And then the show happened and we were right to the side of them. Then we could see them perfectly. I was like, oh, cool. But yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to all of those too. I think also all free shows.
What if we crossed paths?
We did. We did at these emo shows. And I can't remember the band. It was a Switchfoot concert, but there were multiple bands there. And I only remember mm-hmm. Switchfoot, but they were all Christian bands. And one of them was like shouting into the microphone. He was like, it's so cool not to have sex and to save yourself a marriage. And we were all like, woo. Like shouting it angrily.
Was that Five Iron Frenzy? Because that was my go-to band of my high school. Five Iron Frenzy was the shit to me. Or was it DC Talk? Was it DC Talk? Nostalgia, y'all.
I wonder if I could find this old lineup because it was at North Georgia College where my dad taught.
Oh, I didn't go to that one.
Well,
sure.
Yeah, but I wonder if it had a similar
right. Oh, I'm sure. Switchfoot, Reliant K, Supertones, y'all. We're going down a path.
I'm so sorry.
All of them had like the similar venues mm-hmm. and would go together.
Yes. Yes. I'll have to look. I've actually really enjoyed
Jars
even
of
though,
Clay.
Yeah, I remember Jars of Clay. Yeah, I've enjoyed going back down this memory lane even though we're talking about like not great stuff.
Right. Right.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We wanted to go over some sample song lyrics, and these are limited. I had to put a timestamp on how much time can I spend listening to old songs and picking out lyrics that are sexist. But yeah, we wanted to choose some to illustrate what we're talking about here.
This is one of the misunderstood songs as well, like misspoken songs, as in they get the lyrics completely wrong.
Yes.
And I am one of those people. So it's the Fall Out Boy song, which goes, "I'm just a notch in a bedpost, but we're just a line in a song," which of course is from the 2005's "For Sugar, We're Going Down." Still probably could not sing that all the way through and would make up my own stuff, as most people did in that line. And of course, there's also "I Only Want Sympathy in the Form of You Crawling into Bed with Me," also 2005, "Dance, Dance," their other hit. And I still probably would not know that lyric either. But yeah, real gross, y'all.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny slash sad when you're like, not recently, obviously, but when you're in the height of karaoke and you're like, "Oh, I know Fall Out Boy," or whatever song it is, and you're singing it, and as you're singing it, you're like, "Oh, I feel weird about this now." Okay.
It's kind of that same way with a semi-charmed kind of life. You don't know what you're singing, and then you start realizing, oh.
They played for free at my college.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant to say.
Yeah. And it sounds so upbeat.
It's so upbeat, but it's so sad.
The lyrics are not upbeat, everyone. Oh, speaking of not upbeat lyrics, so here's a line from Brand New's 2003 song, "Me Versus Maradona Versus Elvis." This line is like infamous. "I got desperate desires and unamorable plans. My tongue will taste of gin and malicious intent. Bring you back to the bar, get you out of the cold. My sober straight face gets you out of your clothes. I almost feel sorry for what I'm going to do. If you let me have my way, I swear I'll tear you apart." And yes, that is about date rape. Just straight up
gross.
About date rape.
Gross. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the Census Fell 2004 LP says, "So love me gently with a chainsaw and take the glass against your wrist. You're worth more dead."
Wow.
Wonderful.
Okay.
I feel loved.
Yes. So much love from this emotional music. Glass Jaws 2000 Pretty Lush has this line, "You can lead a whore to water and you can bet she'll drink and follow orders."
So the band Ataris and the song, "The Last Song I Will Ever Write About Women," I bet that didn't happen, which is, "Love is wrong and girls are evil. I guess I'll never figure out what womankind is all about." Well, I mean, at least they're honest.
Yeah, I mean, good riddance, goodbye. And then from The Used, who I also saw in concert, 2002's Buried Alive, "My Foot on Your Neck and I Finally Have You Right Where I Want You."
Yeah. And this one was a big one and we still talked about today. And we're definitely going to talk about her own comments. They were one of the few female led punk / emo band, as well as she was a very big Christian girl.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So she was originally, this was not, I don't think this was a Christian band, but she used to be like all about that Christian life. Mm-hmm. And then they got big. In 2018, Hayley Williams of Paramore announced they wouldn't be playing Misery Business, which, yeah, I used to love that song, but this lyric ruined everything, which features the line, "Once a whore, you're nothing more." And it's pretty much woman against woman stealing men from each other, which, again, lived for a long time and still exists, and you still hear it in many songs, including, Mean Girl types of movies. I've seen it featured. Mm-hmm. And they have yet to play it again at a show since. And when they announced this at a show, the audience cheered and applauded. Of course, they also got a lot of pushback, being like, you're being too politically correct, calm down. Mm-hmm. But Williams has been outspoken about the sexism in the emo world in several interviews. Here's a quote. She says, "When I've been offered female opportunities, it feels like a backhanded compliment. But people sometimes think that's anti-feminist, that I don't want to be grouped in with the girls. As a 16-year-old who had dreams of playing with the big boys, it felt like we were being slighted. That summer, we went out, and I'll never forget it. We played in Florida, and the stage was a truck that had a flatbed on it. It was so flimsy, it would shake and fall apart. There might have been one other female in a band on tour, and people were gawking. I don't think in a pervy way. They were just confused, like, what's in this for me? What's she singing about? I'm a guy. How do I relate?" And she also shared the story of getting condoms thrown at her while performing and being asked about her pussy by a man from another band at 16 years old. And when you look at a lot, again, this kind of comes back into that same conversation of like, yeah, this seems cool and all, but a lot of these men were super gross and they did go after young girls like Hayley Williams. And it was really gross because the relationship, some of the relationships were like, how did that happened. Avril Lavigne was another example of like, and I don't think either one of them would say they were victims necessarily, and that they would probably not look at their relationships as a bad thing, but it was oftentimes with like way older men, and you're kind of like, this is uncomfortable.
Right.
Like, there's something off about this, and I think they were targeted a lot. And yeah, again, a majority of the time, the girls were young in emo bands while the men were old. And you're like,
yes,
how did this come about?
Yes. And that is a power dynamic that has been abused a lot because this community was and is rife with abuse of women. And several articles have written about how the lyrics in a lot of these emo songs were essentially grooming young women. For instance, Jessie Lacey of the band Brand New, which we just sang, I didn't sing, I quoted the song about date rape. Also, they had one of my very favorite songs when I was young, and I'm like, I guess that's over for me. And this band is often credited with kicking off third wave emo. They wrote another song about how Lacey wished his girlfriend would die after she decided to spend a semester abroad. And at the same time, he's writing and performing these songs. He was pressuring underage girls to send him nudes while he was masturbating on camera in front of frightened teenage girls. And it took 10 years before they felt safe enough to come out and talk about it.
Here's another example. Mid-2000s Australian emo band, The Gateway Plan's tour manager, John Zimmerman, groomed and raped over 55 young girls. Most of them were fans of the band, and he gave a lot of false promises of introducing them to band members, and he was eventually found guilty of 92 charges ranging from rape, possession of child porn, and sexual penetration of a child under the age of 16. Among other things, he got 16 years in prison. Another Australian pop punk group called With Confidence had to withdraw from all touring in 2020 after allegations that the guitarist was sexting with a fan who was a minor, which came about. And they're like, oh, okay, never mind. And the band fired him and put out a statement supporting the victim. However, less than a week later, another woman released screenshots of explicit Snapchat messages she'd received from the lead singer when she was underage. And they released another statement. And yeah, they stopped touring.
Yeah. In late 2014, a member of Front Porch Step faced multiple sexual harassment accusations from underage girls, including sex and solicitations for pornographic photos. Several of these girls put together a petition asking the founder of Vans Warped Tour to protect young female fans by removing Front Porch Steps from their lineup. After looking into the allegations, the founder agreed. However, a couple of months later, they were scheduled on the Warped Tour lineup in Nashville. And people were rightfully furious. Hayley Williams of Paramore tweeted, "I still believe in you, Scene. Demand better because you deserve better. No more excuses for boys just being boys." He did end up performing, with some girls in the front row crying so hard, he had to stop and address it in mid-song. He and the founder, when interviewed about this, claimed he was playing as a, quote, rehabilitation process. He had six security guards protecting him. Of course, the girls had no protection, no security guards protecting them. And there really is story after story. It's heartbreaking. Often with the male artists getting off relatively scot-free or even suing the accuser for defamation and allowed to continue to perform. And these are only cases that have been officially reported. Message boards are rife with stories of people in these bands or in their orbit preying on young girls, many of them fans, a lot of them underage, blackmailing them and making them feel ashamed to silence them. So maybe getting photos and then telling them, like, "I'll tell your parents what you did," or "I'll show these photos unless you be quiet and or continue this sexual relationship." And it's not only girls and women absorbing these messages, but boys and men too. If they're observing this success and how girls and women seem to enjoy the music and their lyrics, the fangirl over the band members, then it makes sense that they might believe that these lyrics are romantic, that the behavior described in the songs will get them the girl. It might reinforce their feelings of being victimized by women who rejected them, justified in their sense of anger, their intense anger. And it kind of reminds me, honestly, a lot of what we talked about in our mass shootings episode, because these songs are full of self-pity and the bands are loved for it. The source of pain is usually a woman, and women at large are the source of contempt, superficial and unintelligent often. Not only that, being a band member makes that even more okay because these songs teach that putting women through pain for art is entirely acceptable, which again, we talked about in Jennifer's Body. That if you're a nice guy, the whole trope of the nice guy, and women just don't understand you and that they owe you because you are a nice guy.
Right. Articles have pointed out what these men seem to want is in fact girls and not women. Girls who will agree with them on everything, who will do what they want, who will idolize them like they think they should be idolized, because, you know, they're gods apparently, and that this is a world created by men to seduce and impress girls while also deriding them. It's a dangerous power dynamic.
Yeah, and like I kind of talked about at the top, it's been, for a lot of women and girls who were and are fans of this type of music, it has been a real sense of community oftentimes for them, and to have that weaponized has been really painful. And I've read a lot of articles with where it was friendships formed between girls and women because they did make up a lot of these audiences. And then having this kind of realization of, right. Oh, not great. A lot of misogyny and a lot of preying on young girls in this world.
Right. And again, as you were talking about, there's been several instances where women come together and realize, oh, we've all been victims. Mm-hmm. Okay. And which has been the huge mistake of a lot of stars in general, not realizing, hey, if you groom several people, eventually if one tells a story, they're going to see a pattern.
Yeah.
So, which has been an interesting community in itself. Sad that it has to happen, but encouraging that they are talking. Mm-hmm. And from Jessica Harper's 2003 essay on the rise of commercial emo, she writes, "My deepest concerns about the lingering effects of emo is not so much for myself or for my friends. We had refuge in our personal political platforms and deep created record collections, but rather for the teenage girls I see crowding front and center at emo shows. The ones for whom this is their inaugural introduction to the underground. The ones who are seeking music out, who are wanting to stake some claim to punk rock or an underground avenue for a way out, a way under, to sate the seemingly unquenchable nameless need, the same need I came to punk rock with. So I watch these girls at emo shows more than I ever do the band. I watch them sing along, see what parts they freak out over. I wonder if they're being thwarted by the fact that there's no presentation of girls as participants, but rather only as consumers, or if we reference the songs directly, the consumed. I wondered if this is where music will begin and end for them, if they can be radicalized in spite of this, if being denied keys to the clubhouse is enough to spur them into action.
Yes. And people have said that it seems to be the case because things are changing. But basically what Hopper was talking about here is young women forming ideas on who makes music and what it says about women and internalizing that at a young age. Many women, both in bands at the time and fans, spoke of condescension and entitlement oozing from these bands, similar to the fake geek girl thing that, you know, being told like they don't understand real music, that they were only there for sex, that they supported these bands and showed up for these bands, but the bands did not want or support them, or just were just, condescending of them. And I mean, there's a whole conversation we could have too about, we sort of talked about this in Fangirls, where this is a time where girls are experiencing, they're kind of going through these feelings around sexuality for the first time, and you're experimenting, and that's part of the reason why things like Fangirls exist, is because it feels like it's a safer way to experience your sexuality or kind of get a feel for what you're attracted to or all the stuff. And it should be a safe space, but this is just showing that a lot of times it's not. Which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, and it's a slap in the face for, again, we talked about this in the Fangirls episode, how it's a slap in the face when a product you are sending out, so the music, is getting the love that you mm-hmm. hoped it would, but then you're finding that annoying as mm-hmm. well as not taking it seriously. What a slap in the face for those who have bought into what you are selling. And you should be proud and you should be thankful. Mm-hmm. You don't have to owe them anything necessarily, but to ridicule them and or use them is such a disgrace. Yeah. In general. And we've talked about this again with like the bigger boy bands when they come out and they're like, oh, that was me being young and naive and stupid and I hate it. Mm-hmm. How dare you? Like these fans are the ones who made you and put you mm-hmm. in where you are, and to dismiss. Sure, you can do things like, that was when I was younger. Sure. Okay. You grow. Everybody, mm-hmm. Everything's fine. But that doesn't mean you have to ridicule.
Yeah.
What is that brought you into this place?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just saying.
Yes.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another thing that people have written about in when they're kind of digging into this whole situation is that why women, you know, and me included, why were we okay or even like these lyrics? Why did they resonate with us when they were often so outright hateful towards women? And some people think it has to do with internalized misogyny and the whole idea of, you know, like, I'm not like those other girls. I'm not like this girl that broke your heart in this song. I would never do that to you. I can save you. I can fix you. I can make you feel better. Whatever you need me to be, I can be that for you. Others think that because this all coincided with the growth, really rapid growth of internet culture and things like blogs and file sharing, that allowed for this culture to spread and solidify very quickly. So it was just one of those things where suddenly it was everywhere and we just all kind of bought into it. Yeah. And I guess it was, you know, exciting. And I'm trying to think of my own experience because my parents would let me go to Hot Topic, but they were very nervous about concerts. But once I started going, I was like all in. And I think it was almost just like, I'm out in the world and I'm doing this adult thing and being at a concert. And it just felt really new and exciting for me. And there was like, because I've said my very embarrassing truth. I wrote a fan fiction, which was a Mary Sue fan fiction, where I saved the lead singer of Green Day's life, Billy Joe Armstrong, by taking a bullet for him. And I think that's just, you know, that's that stage where you are feeling like, what are these feelings? Maybe I am the person. I could be that special person that will be what they need. And it's not healthy, but I think it's normal and natural.
There's a fantasy, whether it's trying to, again, discover your sexuality, understand your own sexuality, understand romance. Mm-hmm. There's a whole level of absolute understanding, and this is normal. This is you trying to have a fantasy life. Mm-hmm. Of course, there is the unhealthy version when that obsession has become something that stops you from living your everyday life.
Right.
But fantasy life is not a bad thing. And that's kind of the point of having the celebrity crush, the all of those things that is a little untouchable in that level. Yeah. Because most oftentimes that's better than reality and that's what you want. For me, what's so funny in my fantasies, it always ended up with heartbreak. Like I never, like either in their death or my death or some horrible breakup, cheating, like it always ended that way. Mine was not necessarily like, yay, save the day. So it was never that. I always envisioned the like worst case scenario and ran with that. So there's that. But I digress too. This is part of the imagination. This is part of the process of working some things out that you can't do it in reality, in real life. So might as well. And I don't think that's unhealthy at all. We all go through that. My sister and I still debate about who's better, NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. I go for NSYNC. Annie, you're weirdly out in the out of your generation and go for Backstreet Boys. But you know. Okay. Yeah.
this will be what finally tears us apart one day. The NSYNC Backstreet Boys fight. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it just breaks my heart that this normal process is being preyed on by older men. Because you do, you know, you are caught up in idolizing this person, but you don't really understand that, you know, they are a person and maybe you don't really understand what relationships look like yet. And you just are so excited that because it makes you feel like you're the special one if they pay you this attention, and then it's abusive and you don't know what to do about it. Just makes me angry, breaks my heart. Other women have wrote about how these lyrics normalized shitty behavior from boyfriends, maybe even glorifying this behavior, like, ooh, my boyfriend is so artistic or emotional, thoughts like that. And we talked about the romanticizing of emotional men that happens a lot. It's kind of like a running joke about the difference between men's pornography and women's pornography. And that doesn't have to be bad at all. But if this emotion is harmful, one-sided, and toxic, then yes, that is bad. It is bad. Especially when we think about young girls absorbing these messages and internalizing them, believing that's what relationships look like. Or even, yeah, young boys too, that's what romance looks like and that's their role to play in it. There's also a lot of romanticization of tragedy and pain. I find that's common in a lot of our media, actually, that we really romanticize this idea of like the tragic loner hero often.
Right.
Or anti-hero, whatever the case may be. So that can be problematic for people to absorb as this is what romance looks like.
Right.
Yes. Oh, and this is a fact I found interesting. Other music experts have written that in many cases, lead male singers have this like nasally quality in these songs or even not so great singing skills that would have been critiqued the hell out of anyone that wasn't cis male and were straight. That they are benefiting from a privilege of being whiny and emotional when women are punished for being shrill and hysterical. In fact, women who have made it in the emo pop punk scene have had to be exceptional when it comes to skill level. And one of the articles specifically gave examples of Hayley Williams and Avril Lavigne. It was like, they have four range octave. Like they can do right. All of this amazing stuff. Meanwhile, a lot of emo dudes are singing like one octave.
Right.
Kind of just like mumble talking into the microphone. Yeah.
Mumblecore, y'all. Mumblecore. That yes. Exists. No, it's absolutely true. Because when you start looking at the newer wave, I guess, because Panic at the Disco came a little later. He actually has a vocal range and can actually sing and hit different ranges. Mm-hmm. But then you hit like Death Cab for Cutie. He has a kind of operatic falsetto sound.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't hit many of the chords. And he is very distinctive. Mm-hmm. But if you heard him sing regularly, it wouldn't be impressive. You just kind of stare and be like, all right, and move on. Mm-hmm. If you hear individual other stuff like that, Dashboard Confessional, I can't quite remember. I don't think it was all off. Cool Hand Luke, I don't know if you remember who they were.
No.
He was indie, and he was a little more on the Christian scene, and he was that level too. Could not sing. But he seemed so cool, and his lyrics seemed so cool.
So the title, his name was good, Cool Hand Luke.
I knew you would appreciate that, but his actually comes from the movie. I'm sorry.
Oh,
But all of those things are very different in sound, and you're right. Like this doesn't make sense. Not everybody, they just have a band, and they have some vocals in the background. Great, but that's about the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, and I don't want to, if you're listening to this, I loved a lot of this music and I still listen to a lot of this music and enjoy it. But if you think about it, like a lot of it is pretty, you know, one kind of range and similar in topic. It wasn't.
And they would say that for a lot of pop too. They talk about, they make fun of that all the time. And typically they make fun of girls.
That's true.
I've noticed that pop singers who are like, they can only sing four notes. But then if you take them out, like Miley Cyrus is a great example of you think she's just a pop singer. And then you hear her sing outside of, and she can hold those ranges and she can hold those notes and she can hit every note without phasing it. And you're like, hey, she's a singer. She gets it. I can't hit those octaves.
No.
Stop trying, Samantha. Stop trying. But there are things like that that you see people dismiss easily because they seem like a joke, but in actuality, they have a talent beyond.
Right.
And people need to calm the f*** down, as Taylor Swift would say.
Yeah. I'm a big, big believer in, you know, pop music has been really looked down on, especially because I think the fans are a lot of women and girls, and the singers often are too, and actually quite talented. And we always have to ask, like, if a song is resonating, then we have to ask why. Something's working.
Right.
So, yes, admittedly, exaggerating or heightening of emotions is not unique to emo music at all. As the name might suggest, they might have gone, you know, above the average, but it's normal. Some of these bands have addressed their past misogynistic lyrics and made changes. I mean, even like before this, we were talking about past poetry. A lot of my past poetry was really emo and like violent and stuff that was unnecessary. But I was working through stuff.
Yeah, my mom found mine and asked me if I was okay.
Oh my goodness.
As a teenager. So.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it is more emotional and often more violent. But music at large does that a lot. And a large swath of music has a history of being misogynistic, including rock and pop that emo grew out of. Others have correctly pointed out, too, that while hip-hop has been called out and sometimes dismissed for misogyny for years, emo and its softer toxic masculinity, as it's called, has long escaped it. Yeah. But we're talking about emo today. So that was the target.
I mean, and to be fair, one of the songs I called out the most was Paramore's song, which is interesting in itself.
Yes, I found that to be true as well. But there is hope. The emo revival has more female artists than ever. This is going on right now. Though, yes, we still have a long, long way to go. From the band She, Her, Hers song, Killing the Boy Band. Here's some of the lyrics. So you started a band. Well, let me guess who's in it. All straight, all white, able-bodied cis men. Say you don't know many female musicians. Why the f*** would they want to be part of a scene with people like you in it? So.
Yes.
Yes. And, oh my goodness, listeners, if you have any emo bands or pop punk bands with women in them that we should be listening to, we want those suggestions.
Yeah.
I am ready. I'm so ready.
You know, Christina's got tons of these suggestions. Our producer.
Send them our way. You can email us, Christina, or also just, you know, talk to
us. Tell us.
Yeah, whatever way you're more comfortable with. But listeners, if you would like to email us, you can. Our email is stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at @StuffMomNeverToldYou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina.
I bet she's real emo. She got this. She got it.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
A lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having pink lady apple, berry lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.